Okay, Ellen, tell everybody who we got here. It's Grand Central in here right now.
I know.
You know that?
I wanted to preface this by saying Saturday at 4 o'clock, there's a program at the Hudson Opera House called The Incorrigibles. And last week, we talked to some people who had a pop-up museum in the park about the Prison Memory Project.
Mm-hmm.
And we're familiar somewhat with the fact that the present Hudson Correctional Facility used to be known as the New York State School, Girls Training School, I believe. And Allison Cornyn is here. She's directing the project, and she's, I hope, going to tell us more about it. And Roy Ford, who's, I believe, the director of the project. Is that right? And three of the girls who are involved as participants.
Allison, let's start with you. Let's get you right on the mic there.
Okay.
Now, Roy, I said start with you, but you've been here before. You directed the Everyman play, correct?
Yeah, I've been here in the Shepherd's Play.
The Shepherd's Play.
That's like,
yeah. Okay, I just wanted to make sure it's established. Allison, is this a Camp Hill related project?
No, this is a new project that I'm a founder of the Prison Public Memory Project, but this project is a sister project that grew out of that, and it's its own project called Incorrigibles, and it's a transmedia project that looks at juvenile justice and social services for girls in New York, and it has many aspects to it, but the one that we're developing, and it's the first public presentation of the project, is with Roy and girls from Kinderhof Group Home and from Project Unite, and which is the project that we've been workshopping at the Hudson Opera House all week. And its full title is called Incorrigibles, a Sociodrama, and that's where Roy comes in. And so we've been having a workshop every day from 1 until 4, and the public presentation will be on Saturday. But just to give you a little background, and I'll let Roy jump in, what's pretty interesting about the concept of sociodrama is going back to the New York State Training School for Girls. There's a psychologist from Europe named J.L. Moreno who practiced something called sociometry, where he was kind of mapping out relationships among the girls. And he was also working with some of the girls at the training school to do kind of role-playing for different career work. And
this was when?
This was in the 30s. He was there 30s. For 2 years.
At this facility
at,
right
at
here?
At this facility
okay.
right here.
And he wrote up this research?
He wrote up this research, and he mapped out the relationships of the girls in the school in an incredibly intricate way, and Roy has the book, which we should put on display.
And this is providing the blueprint for this project?
Right. So Roy will tell you more about the methodology.
Before we get there, now you said some of the girls in the project are from the Kinderhof Group Home?
Kinderhof Group Home, right.
Is the idea that they would have been perhaps the type of girls who would have formerly had to go to a school like this?
Possibly,
early days when it wasn't really about, it wasn't a prison. It was just, I mean, we had the project people here previously, and they said, you know, you could just be disobedient to your parents and you could end up there. Things
right.
like that. So it's...
You stole her.
What's that?
You stole her line.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I have a tendency to do that. Ask Ellen. I steal all her lines. Anyway.
But so J.L. Moreno was working there for 2 years. He documented some of his work, and I was introduced to Roy by Perfect Ten. And it turns out that this we're kind of bringing the project full circle by him using the sociodrama techniques that J.L. Moreno developed early on to bring them back here to Hudson, working with young girls.
And what's your background?
I'm an artist, and I do documentary projects on the web and installations around social issues primarily, and many, many years around criminal justice issues.
So, Roy.
Yes.
What do you bring to this?
You asked me about the play that I directed before. That's a scripted play, an old scripted play. But what most of my work is non-scripted play, spontaneity theater. And that was developed by J.L. Moreno, so I'm a trained psychodramatist, playback theater person. And I was excited when I met Allison. I'd seen an installation up on the grounds of the prison, and I was fascinated and just happened to meet her in passing at the Nolitas. And she said she was working on this project, wanted to take this work from this box that they found.
The Lisa Durfee box, as it's been called.
Lisa Durfee
box. The Durfee box.
Yeah, the Durfee box, full of stories and pictures and records and all that. And to work with that, and then work with these young girls from today. Mm-hmm. And just, somebody said today, it's like a theater career in a week. And it's been a bit like that. We just dug into the material, dug into getting people up and on their feet and using their bodies to create these stories and the images.
How many girls are involved?
8 to 10, depending on the day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have three of the girls here. Young ladies, I should say. Young women. You want to give your names? First name?
Gina.
Okay, so how did you guys get involved? Who wants to talk first? Not you? Come on.
Cecile wants to talk.
We work at this organization called Operation Unite, and they actually put us in this workshop. And yes. And that's how we got here.
Yeah. So it wasn't voluntary. You were forced into this. It's slave labor. No. You're having fun doing it, right? I mean, you're learning about what went on there, I assume, right?
It's educational and it's fun.
Have you found inspiration in some of the actual documents from the girls when they were there?
I mean, it's pretty dark. Like, it's very, very dark.
In the sense that they're not happy being there, you mean? And they write memoirs and diary kind of entries?
Yeah, like... One girl, Gladys, she wrote a letter to her mom, but her mom was arrested, so we're guessing that she created an alternate reality for her because the true reality was too hard to face, and she was only 12. Her mother sold her into marriage, and she was raped twice. Yeah, that's it.
So, are you trying to recreate being some of these girls, or you're just reading what they wrote, or how are you experiencing the documents?
We are reading into them and trying to get a sense of what they went through. And on Saturday, we are going to perform like a play of what they must have been feeling.
Are you going to recreate how they dressed?
No.
Were there uniforms? I guess I should go to you guys. Were there uniforms for the girls there?
Yeah, there's... I think depending on the year and the policies, things changed. But I've been also doing interviews with women who were there in the 60s and 70s. And Liz Stenson talks about how when she got there, you know, they had to give their street clothes and they got white bras and white panties and a pink wraparound skirt that they all had to wear. Mm-hmm. So I haven't heard that from everybody, but that's one of the uniforms.
Let me ask you, girl, was there any signs of hope or happiness in some of the documents you read?
Possibly, I guess. I mean... It didn't all seem, like, so terrible, but it definitely wasn't the best time being there.
Because it wasn't technically a prison, right? I mean, it was... What was its category in terms of a public facility?
It was a mixture of girls. So mm-hmm. There were some girls who would be the equivalent of PINs today, persons in need of supervision, or girls that were between foster homes, or girls who were kind of sent there because their families, you know, found them out of control. Mm-hmm. And in the early days, in the 20s and 30s, very often it was young women in conservative immigrant families who wanted to go to the dance halls and work in factories, and you know, that was kind of forbidden in terms of what their families thought were okay, so they would get sent there.
Eliza, what are you going to be reading from? talk? Okay. Ellen, you have questions?
I was just going to say, I think it was called a training school, and I think they were actually, they had classes trying to teach them, you know, how to sew and things of that sort, so that they had a practical, could earn a living once they got out. Did you meet any or read any of the documents that make you think that the girls who were there would prefer to be home rather than where they were? Was there anybody who wanted to go home? Or?
Well, the girl I read about, she wrote a letter, and she missed her mom, obviously, but she had fun at the training school. She played games, and the other girls she roomed with, they had games that they let her play with, and she sewed. So it sounded like it was an okay place, but
yeah, it wasn't like torture or anything, right?
No.
Okay.
Did any of you get to actually go and see it, the buildings?
Allison did.
I've been on the grounds, but mostly in the Bronson House and yeah. around the cemetery yeah. that was
right.
that's there, but not
not in the actual prison
not
buildings,
the cottages.
And what was Alan? What was Bronson's relationship to this whole place? Was he, or is that just a coincidence that the Bronson House was there?
I think it was the Bronson House was maybe there before the correctional yeah. facility was. I'm not at all sure.
Yeah, I wonder if the superintendent was able to use that. He was, yeah.
yeah. The Bronson House was actually the superintendent's house.
Oh, okay.
And the superintendent in the 1970s, Tom Tunney, decided that it was too fancy, and it was because it's a mansion, so the girls mm-hmm. had to work there and kind of almost as slave laborers for him. So mm-hmm. he moved his family to a smaller, regular house on the grounds, and then that's when it kind of fell into disuse, and now Historic Hudson is raising money to
well,
bring it
I
back.
I know.
To
my wife's vice president. I know. So this... This performance on Saturday at 4 o'clock?
Yes, 4 o'clock.
At the Opera House, of course. You know Ellen's a big Opera House person, has been forever. So whenever there's anything there, we have to go on about it endlessly. But this is a good project.
Not true.
Right, lately she's been plugging the Hudson Cruises more. It's at 4 o'clock this Saturday, correct?
Right, this Saturday.
And it's a single one-time performance.
One time only, so don't miss it.
Okay. And it's called The Incorrigibles because that's what they called these young ladies, right? I mean, that was kind of the category, just which is such a silly kind of category.
Right, but it's what's interesting about the term is it's still used today to define young people, incorrigible. And,
yeah.
And it kind of means that you can't, there's no hope of change, which we all know is not true.
Oh, well, you haven't met Jake. No, he's not incorrigible.
Allison, you talked about social networking, like the gentleman who was there, J.L. Marino, was sort of tracking that. How does that relate to what you're doing with these girls now?
Roy can maybe talk more about it, but so he was, J.L. Marino developed sociometry really for the 2 years that he was at the school, and so he was doing interviews with each of the girls and asking them who they liked and who they didn't like, and his idea, which was very simple, was that girls that got along should be housed together, and not that just the girls that got along, but girls that got along with certain staff members should be housed together, and the institution will run better. And some of the sociodrama came out of kind of, I think, working within those relationships.
So do you think his ideas were advanced? Or were they, I mean, were they more oppressive, or?
I think they were really ahead of their time mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. His son has recently written a book about his father and the work that he did. Because you've seen a lot of it kind of infiltrate into a lot of psychology and a lot of theater practice, but a lot of people don't even know J.L. Moreno's name.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk more about it, Roy?
Yeah, J.L. Moreno mostly is known as the father of psychodrama. And underneath psychodrama is this body of sociometry. It's group dynamics, how people make choices, why people make choices. His motto was, you know, he wanted to be known as two things: someone who brings laughter back into psychotherapy, but also he wanted to create social methodologies that were healing for all of mankind. And so sociometry was his book, his work that he developed there. His book is called Who Shall Survive, and it maps out, and that's where he took off from there and then developed these other methods.
And how was it he came to the school to be an advisor? Or was that just coincidental?
As far as I know, no. He was well known at that time. He
So he was invited to study.
He was invited
place.
To
yeah.
take and said, and I think it was Helen Hall Jennings, I believe, who was his his student who went, and they just they came in. And some of the other things that you asked, Ellen asked about training at the school. So in the documents we found, you don't find so much good stuff, you know. But we have some pictures of Moreno. He was doing role training, so role training and spontaneity training, so training for jobs, training for social skills, and using the early versions of his methods at the place. And I've lost track. I don't know. Things seem to have gotten worse a few years later after that, but so I don't know. Mm-hmm. Don't know what happened.
So the actual performance will be sort of the girls reciting various passages from documents.
Well, you know, we're working with a whole bunch of different things, sociodrama and something called image theater. So what we've done, the girls have delved in and gotten to know these other girls very well. And then we unpack what you experience in that story, what you feel during that story.
So there'll be an element of them improvising based on what they've read.
Improvising that then we shape into a performance. Right. And we'll offer, as part of the sociodrama part, an audience will unpack some of the stories, and the girls will, on the spot, do some fluid sculptures to show that.
So let me ask you, do you have something prepared in that regard?
Yes, be there Saturday.
Clever nice, response. Nice. Let's end it with that. So, thank you all for coming in.
Thank you.
Apparently my great-grandmother worked there.
Really?
When yeah.
did you find this out? Just now?
Just now. My inside source here texting me.
Your great-grandmother worked yep. there.
Catherine West is her name.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. That's about it. Indeed.
Okay, we've been talking to the crew from The Incorrigibles, which will be 4 p.m. this Saturday at the Hudson Opera House. One-time performance. So if you want to see, and it's all based on the stories of the young women who were at the, I can't remember what it was called.
New York Training School for Girls.
Training School for Girls. Well, thank you all for coming in.
Thank you.
Eliza? Giselle?
Cecile
and Gina. I should remember that one. It's my daughter's name. And, of course, the director, Roy
Ford
and Allison Cornyn. Thank you all for coming in.
Thank you.
We're over.
And now that you've been on the air, you're going to have more people coming there than you can imagine. We hope.